Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And this is the first of two recordings I'm going to do this week. And hopefully we'll be able to find the time to do this kind of recording once a week for the foreseeable future. And it's regarding the topic of Ukraine and the current crisis. The purpose always of setting up the Explaining History podcast was to try to act as a kind of like a filter on the internet to try to present some reasonably good historical analysis by myself of a kind of a flawed interpreter at the best of times, but reading really good history books. So no matter what kind of sort of slightly misleading stuff there is out there on the internet, you can always have the benefit of listening to me talking about people like Adam Tooze and Richard J. Evans and Tony Judd and people like that. So the purpose of talking about Ukraine is not to present there are a huge number of divergent positions on Ukraine at the moment, but it's to try to explore some of those positions. And I don't claim to have a view anywhere near as educated as the foreign policy analysts and defence and intelligence people that are all over this topic at the moment, but we can get somewhere. So to recap where we are at in the current crisis, from the eighth day of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, an invasion that has shocked and astounded foreign policy analysts and military onlookers in the West, and taken a great many pundits in Russia by surprise as well. It was genuinely believed that Putin would try to extract or extort concessions from the border with a big military build-up and not actually go through with the invasion, because the logic of the invasion is very, very shaky indeed. It is beyond any reasonable doubt that Russia will probably succeed in conquering Ukraine. It will succeed in its strategic objectives, but there the problems for Russia will really begin. Russia doesn't have the sort of mass conscript armies that it once had under the Soviet Union. Like most modern military states, it has a highly mobile, high-tech army with specialist troops, and it doesn't rely on conscripts, on mass armies, because its strategic objectives up until now have never really required that. But the stated aim of Putin as of today, March the 3rd, is the full occupation of all of Ukraine and the assimilation of Ukraine and Ukrainians back into this Russian brotherhood. And that rhetoric, if we can look at it at face value, and there are always reasons to not look at things at face value when we look at state actors like Russia and figures like Vladimir Putin, if we can take it at face value as a real objective, it presents a kind of an interesting angle on arguments that are raging across the European and the American left at the moment about the role of NATO and Putin's intentions. Of course, the argument goes something like this, that NATO, an aggressive military alliance formed in 1949, has placed pressure on the Soviet Union ever since, and after the end of the Cold War was involved in wars in the Balkans and more recently in Libya, where in the case of the Balkans, the Balkan Wars, highly ambiguous conflicts where there are bad actors on all sides. Those were conflicts that had a fair degree of public support across Europe. There was there were very few who were willing to give Milosevic or Franco the benefit of the doubt. However, the NATO operations in Libya, which took a reasonably well-functioning, if repressive, state and utterly destroyed it, led to a kind of a completely shattered society where slave markets are now, if not the norm, then quite common practice. NATO's reputation, particularly on the left, has always been treated with extreme caution, and the narrative, this is not supported by all branches of the left by any stretch of the imagination, but by some figures. Journalists like John Pilger at the moment, and Noam Chomsky, and figures like that, view this as an intolerable. The relationship between NATO on the EU on one side and Ukraine on the other as an intolerable provocation to Russia. Then again, you also have figures like Henry Kissinger and John Mearsheimer, the international relations scholar, who have said roughly the same thing. So there are figures not just on the left, but across the political spectrum, that have presented this argument that Russia will have no compunction but to destroy Ukraine, to raise Ukraine to the ground if it looks like it's going to join NATO. The question of NATO membership isn't quite so cut and dry. Most analysts and onlookers have suggested that it would be at least a decade away, NATO membership, and there's no great desire among NATO members countries like France or Belgium or Denmark or Italy to admit Ukraine, because they know precisely what it will lead to. It will lead to a direct provocation of Russia. And once a NATO member is under attack, it's a different story altogether. They can invoke the articles of NATO and insist that NATO allies come and support them, because, as it says in the NATO Charter, an attack on one is deemed an attack on all. Another area of debate is the nature of the Maidan Revolution in 2014. When Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych was overthrown, and the triggering of the revolt against him was the decision for him to reject closer ties with the European Union. The sort of liberal left argument about what this meant was that a generation of young Ukrainians look increasingly to the European Union as the source of jobs, stability, prosperity, travel, and the future of Ukraine. Just as the European Union has expanded to Eastern European countries such as Poland and Czechoslovakia and Hungary, the growth of the European Union in some ways presents more of a challenge to Vladimir Putin than the expansion of NATO. The argument that, well, you know, the Russians wouldn't really like nuclear missiles situated on their borders. Well, you know, nuclear missiles situated in the Midwest of America are as much of a worry. When you have ICBMs, having nuclear missiles right next to you doesn't make an awful lot of difference. But having an economic bloc that is based on the rules-based international order, that is based on the principle of democratization and free and open elections, it's based on the values of the European Union, is something far more insidious as far as Vladimir Putin is concerned. Here you have somebody who, from about 2004 onwards, formed a kind of historic pact and with his oligarchic supporters, these independently wealthy and super powerful figures in Russia, who had managed to successfully loot the state during the communism's dying days, and had managed to create a sort of a kind of quasi-feudalism where the oligarchs were allowed to enjoy the spoils of their conquests and their looting, on the understanding that they recognised Putin as the boss of bosses, and that they supported him unconditionally. And those that haven't done, people like Khodorkovsky and Navalny, have really suffered as a result. There isn't sort of time now to really look at Putin's crushing of dissent across Russia, but in the time that he has spent in office, and he's been in power for well over two decades now, the problems that have arisen for Putin have been in part based around the kind of the growth of the expansion of the European Union. Putin's made no secret that the destruction of the European Union is a strategic aim of his, and whilst perhaps there isn't quite enough evidence as yet, and much of it is disputed, the Steele dossier and the British Russia report, the fingers pointing towards a connection between Russian dark money and destabilizing Psy operations in the West. There is a kind of a growing body of evidence. Whether you can put down these phenomena, or put these phenomena such as Trump and Brexit and the anarchy that they have unleashed purely to Putin is a matter for debate, and it's somewhat appropriate to argue that perhaps America and Britain have done these, brought these conditions about by themselves with maybe a little help from Russia, but it does easily kind of outsource the blame for the social conditions that created such massive resentment in the first place to a third-party state actor. However, the destabilization of the EU is part of the kind of the Putin vision for the return to great power politics, that perhaps in Putin's eyes there'll be three great powers in the world, America, Russia and China, and they'll be able to carve the world up into power blocks that suit them, maybe shattering the European Union and letting the Western countries hide under the umbrella of American power, whilst we sort of pulling away Eastern European ones.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Might be part of the overall kind of Putin vision. There are, of course, plenty of Hungarians, Poles and Czechs that have long and bitter memories of being part of the Russian sphere of influence. And there are Polish nationalists who want long and happy careers with a kind of animated populist support base are unlikely to suggest that Russia is going to be their friend into the future, because history has shown this to be a very foolish assertion. So there are the breaking up of the EU if that is one strategic objective, the possible expansion of the EU into Ukraine really flies in the face of that. And the accession of the Ukraine to the EU is an awful lot more likely than the joining of Ukraine to NATO. So there are all sorts of pundits and Russia watchers at the moment who are trying to make head and tail of Putin. It's entirely possible that someone that we have assumed was a rational actor, this character who's been almost sort of raised to the level of kind of Bond villain by the Western media, may be altogether much less of a rational actor than we thought. One of the great failings of Chamberlain at Munich was his inability to spot this about Adolf Hitler. It was believed by Chamberlain that surely Hitler would do whatever it took to avoid a war, because wouldn't anybody? Surely that's what leaders do. And he didn't realise that Hitler wanted war and saw war as desirable. Now, all comparisons with Hitler are fundamentally lazy, I would say. And all comparisons with Hitler or Churchill or Stalin, they fall down eventually. But there are certain tactics that Putin has employed, which wouldn't have been completely sort of out of place in the fascist playbook, the Nazi playbook. And particularly, if you look at the overall picture that of revanchism and resentment by Putin, who looks at the post-1991 world political order, perhaps with the same level of anger and resentment that Hitler looked at the post-1919 world settlement. And he is somebody who has dedicated his life really to upending the Western-led model of globalization that prevailed in the 1990s, one which led to a collapse in living standards in Russia due to the kind of quite reckless, the insane Western policy of allowing economists and bankers to introduce economic shock therapy in Russia, which did nothing more. It did nothing to create the kind of fantasy of free markets and liberal democracy. Instead, it broke apart state monopolies, plunged large sections of the population into desperation and economic crisis. It caused life expectancy to collapse, and it created the conditions for a revanchist strongman who could restore Russian pride to come to power. And also it allowed for kleptocracy on perhaps a historically unprecedented scale. There's some evidence to suggest that Vladimir Putin might actually be the wealthiest man in the world, as his personal wealth, well, up until recently, outstripped that of Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk or anybody like that, because really it is simply looted wealth. So this is a bit of a ramble today, I admit, and this is just kind of collecting thoughts at the beginnings of a kind of an exploration of what's happening. And by the time I do another one of these next week, the situation might have, well, will have changed beyond all recognition, but events are moving that quickly. But as it stands, this looks like a historic miscalculation, that Ukraine will be almost impossible to dominate in the way Putin wants, and that the Russia will have to pour in resources to the Ukraine, perhaps on a far greater scale even than the Americans and the British and other NATO powers poured into Afghanistan, and they will be unable to rule it in the way that they wish, and they will be unable to derive any sort of value from their conquest whatsoever. It also seems as if this is an action which is almost universally unpopular within Russia itself. So these things themselves don't bode well for Putin's future. But then again, it's important not to underestimate him and write him off, because this is an inveterate survivor and a person who has existed at the apex of power for a long, long time. So the question as to his the extent we can see him as a rational actor or not, again, this is a debatable one, whether it's very useful. Again, I'm not sure. There is some discussion in the British press this week of establishing a no-fly zone over Ukraine. The folly of this, the insanity of this, is really quite extraordinary. This involves Western aircraft firing upon Russian ones. The Russians would test any no-fly zone, and it would be virtually impossible for the Allied powers to enforce it. Anytime there is a shooting war begins between the Western allies and Russia, then we are very, 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 very close to a nuclear exchange. So it is really important to counter these narratives and to try to avoid any sort of engagement. What this means for Ukraine is it means that Russia will have air superiority there, and the carnage will be enormous. Ukraine will, unfortunately, probably be reduced to the ruins that Syria was reduced to, and it's something it gives me no pleasure to say or to predict, but short of some kind of diplomatic breakthrough, it seems that that is likely to occur, and there will be a resultant, and already is a resultant, refugee crisis across Europe. However, if it was Putin's long-term aim to disunify the West, to break up the EU, and to sow chaos within Western societies, well, he's pretty much undone all of those things within just under a week. The EU is unified in ways that it hasn't been in well over a decade, and is willing to consider admitting Ukraine and arming Ukraine. So something of a strategic backfire there, which is cold comfort in such dark times. Anyway, I'll continue a little bit more of this next week, and we'll go to our regular podcast later in the next couple of days. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.